I'm David.
And I'm Matt.
And you're listening to the Mastering Mondays podcast. Welcome to this week's episode of Mastering Mondays, brought to you by No More Bad Mondays. Today we are joined by Parvez Gumra. Parvez is the Technical Director of XRM Solutions UK, which delivers end-to-end project solutions using Power Platform, Dynamics 365, Azure, and other Microsoft applications. With a focus on design, architecture, development, integration, and deployment, Parvez recently achieved the prestigious Microsoft MVP award for the first time. Welcome to Mastering Mondays, Parvez. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure to be here, and I'm excited to be talking to you guys.
Let's start by saying a huge congratulations on becoming the Microsoft MVP. You've been very vocal about the experience. If I quote you from LinkedIn recently, you said, "This award feeds your soul, not your ego," which is beautiful. So take us back to the very beginning. How did your passion for technologies and the desire to deliver high quality solutions and real business value to customers come to be? What made you focus on Microsoft?
Yeah, sure. So my journey actually goes back quite a long time. So right from when I started studying computing at Sixth Form College in the UK, and then I went on to further specialise in computer science at university. I'd always had the passion about, you know, programming and developing software. So I learned technologies, you know, languages like Pascal and Perl and C and PHP and those kinds of things at university and through my academic life. And slowly those kind of ideas progressed into building web applications, which had a database-driven backend, essentially. So those are the types of experiences that I came from. And then eventually I landed in Microsoft.NET development through my sandwich placement at university. And over that time, I started learning more and more about, you know, database-driven web applications and the associated tooling and technologies that come with developing those sorts of applications. And then I started getting into a career after graduating, and then eventually landed in Dynamics development. And that was actually by accident, but I kind of landed into it at the deep end. And I found that I was almost exclusively dependent upon my knowledge coming from people who are sharing those ideas and knowledge in the community. So I was, you know, almost exclusively, as I say, reliant upon their blogs and their YouTube content and tutorials and things to learn it myself on the job effectively. So I felt it was only about time over the years as I built my own experience to kind of give back to that community and help other people learn as well, to essentially give it back to them. And that's where it all started, really. So initially, I just started interacting with people online, the people who are sharing this knowledge, you know, on their socials. I wasn't very actively putting out my own content, but I was just resharing and engaging in conversation with them, attending things like user groups and conferences and that kind of stuff. And then over the years, I became more and more active. I got talking to people, and they started encouraging me to share my own knowledge and ideas. I had a few attempts at starting my own blogs, but that didn't really take off. I wasn't really fully committed to it at the time. But then I started you know, helping people, just answering their questions in forums, in the community forums that Microsoft run. And now there's actually WhatsApp groups and Discord servers as well. So I help out answering people's questions in there. And over time, I've just built, I guess people have started to see me as a bit of an expert in certain fields. Now it's got to the point that people ask me questions directly and with their specific queries. So I continue to help them, and I'm passionate about helping people. So whatever means it takes, I'll go out of my way to help people. And that's one of the ways this award has really come about, really, just through the passion of helping people and making sure I can help people the same way that I received that help as well in the past.
Yeah, that Microsoft community you know, the importance it has in terms of providing support to people, particularly people who don't necessarily have a wider support network, because they're in a smaller organization or whatever, is absolutely very, very important. What's your view on how we can foster that further You know, how can we develop it further?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Community is a big part of, I think, the platform and the product that we work with. I've said to a lot of people in the past that the platform is so big and so so broad in terms of what you can do with it. And it's growing at a phenomenal pace as well. It's impossible for, you know, a one person to know everything about it. So it's very important to have that support network around you of professionals and individuals who are specialists in their own areas, respective areas of expertise. So you can lean on them when you need to, right? Because you never know when you're going to need those specialist experience and those skills. So it's about making sure you actively engage in those sorts of community events, whether that's user groups and forums and conferences, and actively participate. Go and talk to people who are speaking, ask them the questions, talk to them about the challenges you face in your own roles, because those challenges and those problems are not unique to you. Other people have faced those challenges. So you're always going to run into people who, you know, who've found creative ways to resolve those sorts of issues. So get involved, talk to people, ask them questions, and answer their questions as well. You know, it's always about that two-way relationship. So make sure, you know, the more you can do to get involved, the better. And it doesn't have to be, you know, in person. It can be online, asynchronously. You know, the WhatsApp groups, the forums, the Discord groups I mentioned. There's so many different channels that you can get involved in now. Even just by, you know, commenting on people's posts on LinkedIn and on their social media, that can sometimes spark a conversation and create great solutions. And that's something I've been doing quite often as well, regularly.
I think that's a really good point that, you know, it doesn't have to be something vast. You don't have to feel like you're the world authority on something to perhaps provide something that is very useful to somebody else.
No, that's right. That's right. Definitely.
Let's talk a bit about Microsoft's capabilities. So I guess particularly for small to medium-sized businesses and education providers, what excites you most about the capabilities of Microsoft and its possibilities?
I think, obviously, in the most recent times, there's a lot of buzz around AI and Copilot, right? So these are examples of things that have really come into the platform and the product very, very quickly. So it's giving you an idea of, you know, the pace of change in the platform. So it's one of those things that it makes it even more important for you to get involved and keep on top of these things and learn about them in whatever way you can. But I think something that's going probably back a few years is the whole low-code thing, you know, where Microsoft, through this platform, have made it possible for even somebody who doesn't come from a technical or software development background to be able to build quite cool things in apps and automations and reports and, you know, websites and things like this. You don't really need to know. Well, you need to have some fundamental knowledge about the technology, but you don't need that depth of, you know, understanding how the different layers of technology work and fit together and stuff like this. Because in the past, when it was all bespoke development, you know, when I was doing .NET development, you had to set up your database from scratch. You had to understand how you're going to host it, how you're going to secure it, how you're going to scale it, and then understand the different layers of software you're going to have to put together to make your, for example, your front end talk to the back end, and how you're going to do things like, as I say, security and scaling and those types of things. All of that is now gone, you know, with the cloud and the whole low-code platform that Microsoft have given is really something phenomenal, I think, and that's something that really excites me. So it's helped you know, people get people into a job effectively, people who've not done this in the past, and it's grown the community, it's grown the product as well, it's grown the platform. So it's really something quite amazing, I think.
You've been a Microsoft Dynamics developer for well over a decade. For those listening who may not be familiar with Dynamics, can you tell us a bit about its benefits? How has the platform developed over the time, and where do you see it heading?
So, as I say, I started in Dynamics CRM development back in 2010. It was called Dynamics CRM at the time, then it evolved into what we call now Dynamics Customer Engagement. So essentially, it's a set of, now in its current version, it's a set of first-party applications that Microsoft say essentially they live on top of the Power Platform. So you've got a module which is related to sales. You've got another module which is related to customer service. We've got another module that's related to field service, as an example. They basically come with a package of functionality that is ready-made to suit different business requirements. In some cases, they are configurable, so you can make if you like, data changes to make them work in slightly different ways. In some cases, that logic is actually baked into the product and is difficult to customize. So those are, as I say, applications or modules that sit on top of the Power Platform as we now know it. But in the past, they were essentially so tightly coupled with the platform itself that it was difficult to separate them. So you had to have things like Dynamics Sales or Dynamics Customer Service or Dynamics Marketing, and you had to have licenses for those, and you had to extend those, even though you may not necessarily, as an organization, be using huge amounts of the core functionality that came with the product. But because it was so tightly bound, you couldn't really separate it. You had to have it, and then you had to extend it. But now, what you have is this fundamental platform layer at the Power Platform. You've got Dataverse, you've got Power Automate, you've got Power Apps, and you've got the ability to essentially build anything to meet your business requirements, your business needs. You don't necessarily need to have Dynamics Sales. You don't need to have Dynamics Customer Service. If your business model doesn't suit those scenarios, then it doesn't make sense to have that. Especially if you're not going to use the functionality. You know, for example, Dynamics Sales, you have your classic sales pipeline taking from a lead to an opportunity to a sales order. Not every business works in that sort of way, so it doesn't make sense for you to have it. You can just start with the vanilla Power Platform and build on top of that.
So on that front then, you know, Dynamics comes with a licensing cost, and also there is obviously a development cost in terms of customizing it for your business. I mean, can you see Dynamics, I don't know, drifting away somewhat in the sense that, you know, a company might very well say, well, yeah, okay, I can have Dynamics and kind of try and fit it to my process, or I can just get that development absolutely bespoke for my organization. And in fact, that might end up being cheaper because I don't have an ongoing licensing cost because of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see it going away totally because every organization is different, right? I think there will always be a demand for those first-party apps, especially when you talk about the enterprise-scale projects and clients who have established business models that align well with the kind of use cases that you can fulfill with those modules. So, you know, things like, for example, field service is quite a vast product. There's a lot of rich functionality in there. And for organizations who have that sort of business model, I think there's a valid use case for them to consider those products rather than going through plain vanilla and, you know, starting from scratch and building from scratch. But you definitely have to weigh those things up and, you know, think about whether the cost, not just of licensing, but obviously maintaining that going forward and supporting it, whether that's going to be something that you can sustain or whether that's even something, you know, an ecosystem you want to buy into at all.
Yeah, it's a good point that if you've got bespoke development, you know, there does need to be that element of control over that product. And there is an element of risk that perhaps doesn't exist where you've got, you know, a fundamental core that sits underneath it developed by Microsoft. On that front, can we talk a bit about application lifecycle management, which I know that you're well versed in. You know, for our listeners' benefit, this is really talking about governance and development and maintenance of products. And these concepts may not be familiar, particularly to, you know, the citizen developer with their no code and low code stuff. So would you be able to expand a little bit on their importance?
Yeah, so ALM, so for me, because I came from a bespoke .NET development background, things like, you know, source control and automated builds and deployments as part of building software was quite common. You know, it was a norm for teams to adopt those kinds of principles. But when I landed in Dynamics CRM development, I found that it was almost unheard of. So I started doing some research around, you know, why this is, and it basically became apparent that the version of the platform or product at the time wasn't well suited to those sorts of principles. But as things evolved, Microsoft launched the solution framework, and which has now even continued to present day Power Platform and is part of Dataverse. So it's really opened up this whole opportunity of building software which is, you know, enterprise ready. So you can do things like source control and automated builds and deployments and unit testing and all these things. But essentially all it is, ALM is basically designing a process which streamlines and productionizes, I guess, your process for building that software. Because ultimately, even if you're a low-code developer, you're still writing code. You're still writing software. You may not know it because Microsoft puts this layer of abstraction on top of it for you, gives you these nice low-code tools and technologies. But ultimately, you are still building software. So you are a software developer. Therefore, it's important that you go through this process of, you know, understanding that you can track changes over a period of time, as an example, and you can take a particular version of the software that you're building through a series of environments in a manner that is repeatable and robust and free from errors. And once you've got it into your production environment, you've shipped it to your end users, you still have got the ability to, in parallel, work on some new features or additional versions of it, while still being able to maintain the version that you've got in your production environment. So all of these things are essentially principles of a healthy ALM strategy. Now, Microsoft have really, really invested quite heavily in this area, especially in the recent years. So ALM doesn't have to be just for, you know, the advanced scenarios or your pro devs only. You've got the ability now to build really quite powerful ALM stories using, you know, the whole low-code methodology as well with the in-platform pipelines. Granted, in its current iteration, it is quite simple and there are some pretty significant limitations with how it works, but it's only getting better. Microsoft are investing quite a lot of time and energy into this. And, with every passing month, there's always updates coming out. So it's always getting better. And you can have that ALM story at a very simple scale to meet your needs. Or if you work on enterprise-grade projects, you can take it to the extreme with things like Azure DevOps and GitHub Actions and that kind of stuff. And fortunately for me, my experience kind of lands at the enterprise end of that spectrum. So I've kind of developed my experience and established myself in that particular area. And I think it's something that, in fact, at the moment, I'd say there's no reason why there should be any project that shouldn't adopt an ALM strategy. It's there's so many options now, and it's become so easy that I think because of benefits it brings, it's something that every project should consider.
So before you even start developing your fancy little app, just familiarize yourself with this stuff and do it properly.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely.
We always like to ask our guests about a favorite project. So can you share your favorite project that you've worked on, perhaps within Dynamics? What was the initial request? What was the end result? And why does it stand out to you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for me, one of the best experiences was an enterprise-grade project where it gave me a lot of opportunity to learn a lot of things. It was basically a Dynamics CRM 2011 implementation for a professional services organization, but it also involved integration to a Drupal website that the organization were building themselves. So there was a Drupal front end which was exposed to the end customer, to the client, the external world, and it was integrated with Dynamics CRM 2011 at the time. And essentially what we had was a web service-based integration whereby the Drupal website would submit an XML-based payload to the web service. And that web service wrote a bunch of data to Dynamics CRM. The reason why it was interesting was because the structure of that payload that was coming from Drupal was evolving, was changing all the time, right? So we had to have a model which was not static. It had to be able to evolve and change over a period of time with minimal impact to the rest of the application. So we basically built something which was really quite fluid and worked on things like mapping tables. So we could extract out of an XML payload a specific element in the XML and decide which field in Dynamics CRM it's going to be written to. And those mapping tables could be modified as we went along. So that opportunity really gave me insight into, you know, things like web technologies, web services, integration patterns, scaling, and it really kind of opened up my experience in those sorts of areas. So I guess the main reason why I enjoyed it was so much, I learned so much from it, and that's the main reason.
Parvez, do you find that the businesses that you're engaging with in technology have changed over time? That there are particular sectors that perhaps weren't interested to the same degree in the past that are interested now, or even sizes of business? Do you increasingly find smaller or medium-sized businesses that are interested in seeing how technology can move their organization forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because of the direction that the platform has taken, there's definitely we're definitely seeing a trend whereby organizations are becoming a lot more savvy about the tech and the platform. They're choosing to, you know, embark on projects themselves rather than relying on partners. I've definitely seen a trend go that way. They're keen to learn more and more about the platform and the technology themselves. They're exploring things like, you know, Copilot and AI and things like this rather than relying on a partner to support them. Or only relying on a partner where they've got more a kind of advanced or skills that they need where they don't have in-house expertise. But yeah, they are definitely exploring the platform and the technology much more, I think, now than they have done in the past.
Can you imagine that the, you know, your consultant might have a slightly different role in the future in terms of being almost more of a mentor to business, the people who are involved actively in the business, who are developing the tools that can help them?
I think that's already happening. We're already in that scenario. You know, you find more and more projects now that partners are delivering. They're not going in and doing the actual build or the delivery. They're going in and say, look, we're going to come in. We're going to do some education for you. We're going to help you understand what the capabilities of the platform are and what the best practices are around that. And then we'll say, right, you perhaps will come in and help you build your team, but then you own the actual build and delivery of it. So that's definitely already happening. I've been involved in a few projects that are working in that sort of manner.
That's interesting. So what one tip would you give to an SME or an education provider? If there's just one thing that they should be focusing on now within the Microsoft ecosystem, what would it be?
I'd say definitely get the data in order, right? So if you're going to start off looking at things like Copilot and AI and your data is not in good shape, I think you won't get the results that you're looking for. It's really, really important to make sure that your data is clean, it's well structured. There's no kind of redundancy or things like that in there. It's stored in the most optimal manner to make sure that, you know, your applications and things perform in the most efficient manner, and you know, it's all secured and all of those kinds of things are looked after. I'd say definitely get the data in order. That'd be my main tip.
It's interesting you say that, because I saw a LinkedIn post the other day, which was was it LinkedIn? It may have been just on the web, and it was a comparison of somebody who had stored data on the same information on SharePoint within Dataverse, you know, in various different forms, and then they'd used Copilot to bring back those answers, and it was very interesting. They were looking at it from a speed perspective, but also a completeness of answer, and there was a difference. You know, it actually found that, you know, when they were querying Dataverse, for example, they got a more complete answer than SharePoint, which surprised me. So yeah, it's important to have your data held in the right way and in the right place, definitely.
Quick question: out of all the Microsoft applications, big and small, so, you know, Planner, Loop, Power Apps, etc., which one is your favorite? And you cannot say Dynamics.
If I was to slightly change the question, and if you asked me about which product within the platform I'm most passionate about, I would have to choose Dataverse. Even though it's not, I wouldn't say it's a product that you use in its own right, but I think it's so, so important because it forms the backbone of everything within the platform, right? So you've got not only the data structures, but the APIs that brings you the ability to build logic within the Dataverse, the ability to secure the data, and obviously enabling the whole ALM story as well, right? That forms the backbone of the platform for me. So I'd definitely choose Dataverse.
Bhavez, it's been a pleasure having you on the show today. Your journey and insights have been really captivating. Thanks once again for joining us on this episode of Mastering Mondays.
No problem. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure talking to you guys. Thank you.